So I want you to get up now. I want all of you to get up out of your chairs. I want you to get up right now and go to the window, open it, and stick your head out and yell, "I'm as mad as hell, and I'm not going to take this anymore!"
Show brought to you by the MVM Radio Network, home of LouisvillePolitics.com. What a week it apparently is going to be. We are already hopping, and it's only Monday. So much going on, so little time. So let's just get right to it. How are you, Mr. Martin?
All right. Doing all right, Mr. Springson. Let's get right to it. What have you got in store for us?
Well, let's take care of the easy stuff first, because this is a no-brainer. But as we know, Greg Stumbel has sworn up and down he was not going to let the hemp bill advance, and lo and behold, he proved it again today. He basically declared the hemp bill to be dead because, quite frankly, he said there's just not enough time to consider it in this session because it didn't come out of Rules Committee until too late. Now, here's the thing. We know that Representative Tom McKee decided to play some stupid games to delay this from finally getting to a vote. Once it got to a vote, it was almost unanimous that the hemp bill should move forward. Greg Stumbel has been on record siding with Steve Beshear against industrial hemp since the beginning, regardless of any testimony from anybody, including Bill Clinton's former CIA director, James Woolsey. So now he says we don't have time to do anything with this. After delaying and delaying and delaying, how can he actually use this as a good excuse? Is beyond me. How about you?
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's the same old crap. It's like I posted not too long ago. It's like, look, let me tell you what's not going to happen in this session. You know, and they were not going to pass the hemp bill. They're not going to pass tax reform. They're not going to pass any meaningful job stuff. They're not going to pass any meaningful infrastructure maintenance programs. They're just not going to pass pension reform. They're not going to. And so it's like, you know, a part of me wants to discuss it, and the other part wants to say, you know, what the hell? I could have told you this at the beginning of the session. And it's just like, really, it's just like the sequester in the fiscal cliff and every other stupid thing that goes on. You know, what are we down to, the last 4 days in our session now? Four or five?
Well, yeah, I mean, basically, you got 2 days left to do business and 2 days' time.
I mean, you know what? I got news for you guys. It's called the internet. It's called email. Hell, you could sort this crap out on Facebook, you know, but these guys get together and go, oh, I only got 30 days to do it. You know what? With electronic communication, our lawmakers ought to have to get together maybe one week out of the year and just openly settle stuff ahead of time. It's not like you have to do it right there, face-to-face, you know, over bourbon or whatever, or, you know, lotion or whatever it is you guys use up there. And, like, you know, it's crap. You got 30 days to do it. You get down the last 4 days and go, oh, we're out of time. It's like bull crap, you know.
I think Jamie Comer.
You know, everybody could have had this hammered out. And you know what? And it's going to end. The session's going to end. They're going to have a special session. And it's not like they all don't have each other's emails or they all can't just build a big, fat Facebook page and have these discussions out in front of everybody or something throughout the year, you know.
Well, that's the whole problem, though, Ed. That's the whole problem, though. And, you know, Speaker Stumbo, you know, this is just something he planned on doing from the very beginning. Delay, delay, delay. He said it doesn't have time to get voted on because it didn't come out of the Rules Committee until too late. Yet even later today, Stumbo acknowledged that there were some bills that were moved from the Rules Committee to the House floor. You know, and Stumbo said they weren't going to act on it, but they're probably going to act on a couple of them. So he's already defeated his own lie by his own words. And then when he asked why the bills will be treated differently, the ones he decides to act on and the ones that he doesn't, he goes on to say that there's good bills and bad bills. And Senate Bill 50, which is the industrial hemp bill, is not a very good bill. Who the hell is he to make that decision? This passed out of the Rules Committee by almost a unanimous vote. And, you know, this is – and I think that Jamie Comer says it quite well. Jamie Comer said that Speaker Stumbo is a tone-deaf, one-man band trying to kill the only jobs bill this session. It has come to symbolize everything wrong with Frankfurt, and I hope the Stumbo's fellow Democrats recognize the backlash that will result if they follow him on this one. And I agree with Jamie Comer. I agree with him 100%.
And I'm glad he said it like that, too, because, you know, I know that his office and himself have put a ton of effort into this, you know.
Well, there's no doubt.
As had the late, great Gatewood Galbraith, you know, for years.
Well, and don't forget right now we've got Rand Paul and John Yarmuth working together to help us with this.
Yeah.
You know, we complain about gridlock.
It's just over and over, and this thing is doing well, you know, and it's getting all sorts of support. And like I say, I'm glad to hear that Comer went after him the way he did, you know, a tone-deaf, one-man band. It's like, good, because I get so sick and tired sometimes of listening to these people go, well, you know, my distinguished colleague, it's like, oh, no, you're right. You're right, Comer. He is a one-man tone-deaf band. I mean, it's just horrible. He's a sandbox dictator is what he is.
I don't think there's any doubt about that. Let's go to the phones. I think this is our good friend Ken Mulman with Liberty Unbridled, is it?
It is indeed. How you guys doing?
Man, I'm getting so much better at your phone number, it scares me. What's going on, my friend?
Well, you know, the memory kicks in eventually. You look at that number and go, oh, crap. Anyway, the point, I guess, that I wanted to call in about two things. You know, Ed Martin had mentioned something about doing meetings on the internet and that, and the only thing that has to be cautious there is that all that stuff would have to be open record. You know, it has to be, you know, as long as it could be taken with open record, then it'd be fine. The open meeting.
Well, let me ask you something, Ken. I mean, you bring up a valid point about the open records, but if they had this meeting online, could they not do it through a Skype conference call? Would that satisfy the open meetings laws and things like that?
Absolutely, and I think that would be a heck of a lot cheaper. Let's get internet access to every one of these guys' house and set them up. We can probably pay to have somebody come install the stuff at their house and maintain it cheaper than it costs to have a session down in Frankfurt, you know, especially a special
session.
Well,
there you go.
Well, I think truthfully, you know, I'm sure there's some constitutional stuff where you got to be present for a vote, but to me it's like in our business, we settle – 95% of business is done on the phone or done over the, you know, internet or fax. We do it remotely. And like a couple of weeks ago, then you go to that city and you sit down and, you know, and you do the old fashioned thing. You shake on it. You check each other's facilities out and said, yeah, okay, this partnership is going to work. But you settle most of it ahead of time. And that's what these goofballs can't do. I mean, it's like they don't talk to each other. 335 days out of the year, and then 30 days a year they start talking to each other.
Well, that's a lie.
The first 25 of it, you know.
That's a lie. I'll tell you right now, that's a lie. These guys talk to each other throughout the year. Okay, they really do. I know this for a fact.
They don't get anything. They don't get anything.
Exactly. Well, that's exactly it.
They don't talk to each other about anything substantive.
Not necessarily. Not necessarily. I'll be honest with you. I've actually listened to conversations between, you know, sitting reps and sitting senators who talk throughout the year. They call back and forth talking about stuff that they're going to bring up or they're going to do during the session, and that actually starts as soon as the session's over. These guys make phone calls all the time. That's not the issue. And I also want to point this out as well. As far as the being present to vote, Ed, the statement you just made about that, we've already proven that that's a lie. We have representatives and senators that are illegally voting on bills for their colleagues. We've got video of them turning around and hitting buttons for their colleagues because their colleagues aren't there to vote. Okay, so we know that that's going on, too, illegally. Ken, go ahead. I didn't mean to cut either one of y'all off. Go ahead, Ken.
No, you're fine. You're fine. You know, that's actually – I've not seen that video, and I'm very interested to find that out because I'm fairly certain there's nothing that allows vote by proxy in our Constitution.
There's absolutely not.
You know, that's horrible. And that needs to be stopped immediately. The what I was going to hit on the hemp thing, and this is the most frustrating part about the hemp bill. You know what? Maybe it's not perfect. So what? It's not like they're going to start growing hemp next year. We have the whole federal thing to gyrate through, too. All this does is start to put the pressure out, you know, or raise the issue, not even really put pressure at the federal level and say, hey, we'd like to have this conversation. It doesn't do anything. I mean, they can...
No.
It doesn't change any of the rules. It doesn't change anything. All it does is put a framework in place to start a discussion. And if you don't like how it's set up, you know what? Hey, this time next year, you guys can do this again in the full session when you get the full 90 days.
Well, you know what?
You know,
the thing is, that's exactly, and Ken's exactly right, that's exactly what they did with the pill mill bill, the thing that the SB1 had last year. There was a little bit of the regulations on hospitals and stuff were a little onerous. You know, it wasn't perfect. That's what Greg Stumble, you passed it. It wasn't perfect. Went back and tweaked it a little bit this year. Great.
Well, it's totally fascinating. And actually, they tweaked it, but they didn't do any good with it. It was a joke, the tweak that they did. But that's another story. What's really interesting here, though, is, I mean, you know, even if the federal government says that they'll allow production of the crop, Greg Stumble decided he was going to kill this. He knows that this has to be approved at the federal government level, regardless of what we do. So what he just said was that I'm going to do what I want to do, to hell with the people in the state needing jobs, and to hell with the federal government. If the federal government said tomorrow they would allow production of hemp, we wouldn't be able to regulate. We wouldn't be able to grow it now because of Greg Stumbo. This is Stumbo, plain and simple, as Jamie Cumber said, being a tone-deaf, one-man band, trying to exert some kind of power he thinks he's got. I got news for you. The only power he's got, as far as I'm concerned, is a swift kick between the legs. I wish somebody had the power to do that to him because he deserves it. He just screwed Kentucky. He flat out screwed us. And there's no ifs, ands, or buts about that. This is the one thing that the Senate Democrats and Republicans agreed on. It's another thing that the Senate Democrats and the House agreed on. Here we continue to gripe and moan and groan about bipartisan solutions to problems. We've got a great example with the industrial hemp bill of being a bipartisan solution and approach, and because House Speaker Greg Stumbo gets to pick and choose what he wants to do, and I think that's where the Kentucky Constitution breaks down tremendously. No speaker should have the authority or the power to kill a bill and not bring it to the floor once it comes out of committee just because they don't like it.
Right. I agree with that 100%. There should be a mechanism. And I know if it gets dumped into a committee to die, right? There's a process called a discharge petition, which can force it out of committee onto the floor. Mm-hmm. But because this thing got out of committee and it was debated in committee, it didn't go there to die. It got the debate. They couldn't do the discharge petition. Well, now it's caught in this limbo of it's there, it's on the floor, but it's not allowed to come up for debate. And there should be a mechanism. You know what? If you want to have the House Speaker have some power or whatever, fine. But it should be something like kind of like the Senate cloture vote at the national level, right, where 60% stand up and say, we want to vote on this, then, hey, there's a vote. Sorry. You know, there should be some sort of check and balance there. It can't be – the power can't be all in one person's hands.
Well, it really can't be.
Exactly. Like if it comes out of committee with a supermajority, as they like to call it, then it has to go for a vote, automatic. I mean, something.
Yeah.
Well, and that's the whole thing. And of course, we know that the 60-vote rule don't matter anyway, as you just mentioned, Ken, because Stumbo actually kicked back some other plans to the Senate where he had to have 60 votes to kick it back to the Senate and only had 52. And he sent it back and saying, well, it was a Senate bill, so they've got the responsibility. Bullshit, because all spending originates in the House. And he's trying to force the Senate into some spending bills that they don't have the authority to do without the numbers. So this is Greg Stumbo being Greg Stumbo. You know, it's clearly obvious that this guy is a maroon. He needs to go. There's no doubt about it. And I think if the people of Kentucky, the Democrats of this state, are so damn hung up on some kind of a power trip that they're going to continue screwing the people of Kentucky, then we need to replace all the Democrats. That's just all there is to it. And quite frankly, in this particular bill, we see a lot of progress. You know, I'm not much to give too many Democrats any kind of credit, but in this bill, we see a lot of progress with the Democrats. This was a bipartisan deal, almost unanimous across the board. How in the hell can Greg Stumbo have that kind of power? It's beyond me. It's just totally beyond me. I don't get it. I just really don't. And we've got some other things going on. We're going to move on just a little bit because I don't want to spend the whole hour on industrial hemp. We do that quite enough as it is. But, you know, here in Louisville, Ken, your mic is open. If you want to weigh in, feel free to. But here in Louisville, you know, we've got a great story coming out of the Courier-Journal that poor Mayor Greg Fisher is saying that the Louisville Free Public Library is out of money. They're not going to do any more work. Boo-hoo. Blah, blah. And let's look at the reality here, folks. For you guys in Louisville that are listening and across the state, this is what you do. You defeat a library tax 5 years ago, so the city can't come up with new money to screw over with because it wasn't going to go to the libraries. It was going to the general fund. Okay, that's why we beat it in the first place. There was no end date in sight. So then they say, well, we know we're not going to get a library tax, so what do? We're going to go ahead and go for this local sales option tax. Well, we don't really have any sitting projects that are waiting that we just can't do without. So now you've got to come up with something that's going to hit the heartstrings. So now we're back to the libraries and the children. Greg Fisher is saying that the budget is completely screwed, everything else. It's all because of the sequester. It's going to cost us $8 million. Pension costs, health care costs, although there's some truth to that, he's wrong in that. That's not what's screwing Louisville. You know, we turned down the library tax. Now he wants this local sales option tax. And I don't have the latest update out of Frankfurt on it, folks, and I apologize for that. I'm sure we'll have something tomorrow on that. But, you know, Ed, now they're going back to this routine. Let's go to the libraries. Let's blame it on the kids. So we'll go ahead and jump on board, get the local sales option tax so they can bring in all this money. And once again, the libraries are still going to suffer. How do they justify this garbage?
It's like boiling a frog. I mean, let's face it. You got people like Barbara Shanklin and others who are going to get, $25,000 for a free community festival. We build other library branches all over town. And it's just, you know, they do what they do. And by the time you've forgotten about them building all these other new library branches, by the time you've forgotten about all the money that's gone into schools and not yielded results, by the time you've forgotten about all that other stuff, well, then they slip this one in on you. It's just, I fight so hard to believe that these are conspiracy theories, but, you know, with the regularity that crises come out of Washington and with the regularity that a crisis, that pulled at your beaver cleaver heartstrings, or, you know, library.
Well, and this is what's really fascinating, too. Yeah. Don't forget.
They just keep it coming, you know. And once all the money that the Yum Center is losing fades into the rearview mirror, then they come back with a local option sales tax. It's for the library. No, it's not. It's for the Yum Center.
There you go. That's exactly where I was headed. Because, you know, the Democratic-controlled Metro Council, folks, the Democrats have controlled the Metro Council since merger. That's the truth. There's nothing to do that. And they gained even more seats last time. But once the library tax was defeated 5 years ago, the Democratic-controlled Metro Council promised to boost the library's construction and operating budgets. Clearly, we have the money. All right? But you're exactly right, Ed. That's where I was heading. You know, it's not the pension costs, the health care costs, and the sequester that's killing us. Those are high costs, don't get me wrong. Certainly not the sequester. That's a joke to even consider that in this damn argument. The pension costs and health care costs are way too high. I totally agree with that. But that's not what's killing our spending. It's the KFC Yum Center. Greg Fisher never mentioned the millions of dollars we're paying each year for the KFC Yum Center, a center that every expert, local experts, business experts, David Jones, John Schneider, and even, yes, even myself, Ed Springsteen, when running for mayor in 2006, told the whole world that we would be paying millions of dollars each year for the Yum Center within 5 years. There was no way to deny that was going to happen by anybody with any credibility. And now we're paying that price, and all of a sudden, you know, it's the pension costs and health care costs of the Killens Library after the Democrats said they were going to fund it anyway. It is a joke, plain and simple.
Oh, and hey, let's not forget, each council critter, you know, can get their hands on pretty much $250,000. So, hey, if you really care about the libraries, take all your discretionary funds and pull them to the library. Impress me.
Well, there you go. $5.5 million a year with all the council members' salaries and all the extra badges they've got. You can get rid of $5.5 million a year by putting this council on a part-time budget like they should be and having them have across-the-board votes on all spending. Forget these expensive accounts. They should never have $250,000 in a row.
That's just the most recent thing they're going to parade around. It's the library. I mean, like I said, and it comes at a fairly steady clip. You know, the school board's going to raise their taxes. Well, you know what? The public's forgotten about that. Let's go prying to them. Oh, we're going to raise your sewer tax. Well, the public kind of never really caught that, so let's do something else. Oh, we're going to raise your drainage fees when it rains like it did today. You know, think about that, people. It costs you money when it rained today. How cool is that? If you're the one doing the billing. You know, some said they just, and they keep it coming. They just keep it coming. It's like, okay, well, we forgot about the drainage tax. All right, well, now everybody's forgotten about it. Let's go bellyaching about money for libraries and see if somehow we can push this local sales option tax through in the last 4 days of the session, or maybe we can get it queued up for a special session, which is no doubt coming.
Well, there's no doubt. Yeah, we're obviously going to be locked into a special session. It's gotten to be, you know, a comical because we have one every year for no reason whatsoever that these clowns don't want to go to their real job or something. That's the only thing I can think of. You know, and then we've got some other crazy stories hitting the airwaves. Here in Louisville, a Louisville police officer, Officer Graham, was fined $2 today.
Ooh,
I'm sorry. This was last week. He was fined $2. Officer David Graham was the officer convicted of official misconduct and harassment. And what did he do to cause that conviction? Well, he had a handcuffed suspect he decided to slap around and poke around. A Jefferson District jury on Friday fined Officer David Graham $1 for each of the charges. $1 for each of the charges. Now, understand this, folks. The guy that he was slapping around was a punk. He was a thug. He was a thief. He was no good. He's got a rap sheet.
We'll go all that record.
But once this guy is in handcuffs, leaning up against the car, no threat, not trying to run, not doing anything, leaning up against the car with the cuffs on like he should have been, for you to get pissed off as a cop and start smacking him around just because you want to, that is very disturbing. And it's yet one more example of what is going on with LMPD today. Now, next week, next Tuesday, actually, I go to trial for my case. I was arrested for obstruction for asking an officer his name in a polite manner. Sir, can I please have your name? When they were jacking up my son, and I was 50 feet away from the scene. You know, this is the kind of crap that's going on with LMPD. For years now, I have supported LMPD. And that's not going to stop today just because of these kind of incidents, because there are some good officers out there, folks. But it's becoming alarming to me how many officers continue to abuse what they perceive to be their authority. A $2. How does a court find a guy guilty of misconduct and harassment for striking somebody? Ed, if I hit you and you sued me, are you going to get $2 or are you going to get a hell of a lot more?
No, I'm gonna get a lot more, and we can come out with a non-cash settlement where we could just strap on the MMA gloves and settle it. You know, you gotta go 5 minutes, but and what people look at is like, oh, well, he was a punk, he was this, he was that. It's like, but you know what? Same officer or similar scenario, having a bad day, you do something, you know, you get a little out of line. I mean, I've been pulled over before for things I didn't do, and fortunately I didn't, you know, didn't go too far. But, you know, since when? Well, since when did somebody have a bad day and they put some nice stainless steel cuffs on you, and all of a sudden, you know, he's having a bad day. He says, it smacks the crap out of you. I mean, that could be you next.
Well, and that's just really interesting, too, because, you know, now here is actually two good things to come out of this, if you will. One, I actually agree with the Assistant Jefferson County Attorney, Julie Hardesty. She said the guilty verdict was significant. Yes, it was. But why was it significant? That brings me to the next, it's the second point. For the last few weeks, I've been getting questions. Can police officers be sued? This is proof that they can be sued. This is proof. This guy, you know, went outside of department rules and regulations when he did this. He was convicted of misconduct and harassment, so he deserved to have to pay something. Now, $2 is a joke to me. You know, in this particular case, I guess the jury probably did, you know, forgive him for doing this. Maybe he just got upset and freaked out or something. But at the same token, you know, aren't officers supposed to be trained not to do that? When did police become above the law that they try to enforce? They are no different than you and I are. They might have a badge on their chest. They might have a gun on their hip. But they are still obligated and required to follow the same laws that we do. And that's the biggest thing. And they
have available counseling. They're surrounded by their peers. So it's like, look, when you know, we do it at our place of work. You know, you tell some guys, get a little wound up. You find a way to step him down a little bit. You find a way to get away, you know, diffuse the situation. Send him off to work where he doesn't have to deal with whoever it is that's pissing him off. But, you know, that to me is the alarming thing. It's like, look, if this guy's walking around just looking to smack the crap out of somebody, you know, they're having coffee and donuts with him or something, and he's just, you can tell he's wound tight. It's like somebody needs to look at it and step in. The reasonable and more experienced police would say, I think you need to limit yourself to traffic stops today. And they should be able to do it themselves. They should be able to look at their buddies and go, hey, you know what? The home situation's a little stressful right now. Whatever, the kids are sick. I'm didn't sleep worth a crap. Can you know what? Here, I'm going to back you up.
And here's the thing too, though.
I don't think I'm the guy that needs to be face-to-face with this mouthy punk.
Now, my guy was a three-year idiot. I mean, rookie. You know, my guy was a joke in himself all the way through. He was looking for trouble and found it. But, you know, in this particular case, this guy has been an officer on the police force since 1999. He's a 4th Division cop, and he's been there since 1999. But what's really interesting here, too, and this is another thing that drives me completely crazy, the guy hasn't worked since last April. He hadn't worked since last April. He's been on paid administrative leave since last April, pending the outcome of an investigation by PSU. Those are the guys who investigated my case and found my officer guilty of a couple of things. So, you know, PSU is still investigating this guy since last April, and he's been on paid administrative leave since. Why is this guy getting paid with my tax money for almost a year, and we're saying Louisville is broke? Here he was convicted of harassment and misconduct. He's got a conviction.
Why is he still getting paid? That, no doubt that year applies towards his pension. So if he's got to do, if he's got to do 30 and out, well, he just got a free ride on one of them.
Mm-hmm. And he's out working a second job, so he's making money. Yeah, you know, I mean, this is the kind of stuff that drives me nuts. Now I understand, you know, cops can be accused of anything. They can be accused of anything, but clearly. Almost a year later, he's still under investigation for this one incident. He was just convicted in court last week. But this thing went on for a year, so he gets paid for a year. How long does it take Professional Standards Unit to complete an investigation? My particular case, cut and dry.
Not only to complete an investigation, but an investigation with a video. This is not like they had to go around and round up witnesses. It's like, look, here's a guy handcuffed, leaning up against the car. There's a cop, not handcuffed, standing right in front of him, smacks the snot out of him.
You know, that's interesting.
I mean, that's like instant replays on NFL. What don't you get about that? what other circumstances are you working with? Was there somebody Was there somebody, did somebody call him on a cell phone and says, hey, I got a high-powered rifle aimed at you, and if you don't smack crap out of this kid, I'm going to shoot you. I mean, what could possibly, what could take a year when you have a video?
There's no telling. There's no telling for me, because I'll be honest with you. My particular case, I was arrested on July the 26th. There were three witnesses and two cops. That was it. All three witnesses gave their testimony to PSU in less than 30 days. It took about 2 weeks for them to do their testimony. It took 4.5 months to get the testimony from the two officers involved. Now, explain to me why it takes 4.5 months to make a decision or question your own officers as part of your investigation. It's beyond comical. We are wasting tax resources. We are wasting valuable time. But more importantly, we continue wondering why people distrust the police so much. Well, I don't think that there's really any question anymore. When you've got a guy who's been getting paid for a year after jacking a kid up who's in handcuffs. Now, I don't like the guy. I mean, based on what I've seen about him, I don't know the guy personally. I've looked at some of his record. I look at what he's accused of, what he was found guilty of, and I'm like, you know, this guy is scum. He's scum. But does that mean the police have the right to knock you around when they've got you in custody just because they don't like who you are? No. And the law clearly – yeah, exactly. And the law clearly agrees with that statement because they just convicted this cop for harassment and misconduct, but they only gave him a $2 fine. So, you know,
yeah.
I don't know what the answer is from a monetary standpoint, but I certainly have a hell of a problem understanding that this cop has been paid for the last year after doing something like this, and he's a 14-year veteran. That's a scary thing to me as far as how far down LMPD has gotten, and it's something that we really need to look at. We got to take a quick break, guys. We're going to head out to a break. We'll be right back. Phone lines are now open, 858-683-1326, 502-805-0334. And don't forget, you can join us on our live chat. We'll be right back. Stay tuned.
Hey, everybody. Gather around. I'm here to give you anything you like. You want free college, energy, mortgages, whatever you like. You have come to the right place. Why? I'll tell you why. Who can take your money?
Who can take your money?
With a twinkle in their eye.
A twinkle in their eye.
Take it all away and give it to some other guy. The government.
The government.
The government can.
Uncle Sam.
Oh, I tell you, folks, I love that song, The Government Can, by comedian Tim Hawkins. You can catch that song and all his other ones at timhawkins.net. That's a great song, I tell you what. You know, guys, we're going into break. We're talking about this crap with this cop. You know, and LMPD does have a rule that they're supposed to have their investigations completed within a certain amount of time. I believe it's 90 days. Now, when we look at this, I mean, for something as simple as mine, in my particular case, you had my son, his girlfriend, me, my wife showed up after I was already in transport, and two officers. Now, I understand, you know, Ed, you mentioned a minute ago you got to find witnesses and stuff, and you're absolutely correct in that. In my particular case, we had all the witnesses available for the PSU unit. They sent two detectives out here, questioned all three of the witnesses, because they already had my statement. I gave it to them, which started this whole show, in about 2 to 3 weeks. All the statements were there and done. It took an hour. They got everything they said that they needed and wanted. Went back, and for the next 2 months, when I was calling to get updates on this, they were telling me that they were still waiting to get officer statements. Now, LMPD controls their officers. That's it. If PSU says bring your butt in here for an interview, guess what? You bring your butt in there for an interview. If I work for Ed Martin and Ed Martin tells me to get to his office, we need to talk about something, guess who's going to Ed Martin's office to talk about it? That's what you do. It's common sense. And these guys,
Ed Martin understands that if you're on the clock, that you'll be getting paid when you're walking to the office and stuff. You know, it's like, so it's not like the cops aren't getting paid for the time they're getting interviewed. But it's awesome.
It's an incredible situation. And my particular cop has been on the force for 3 years. His name is Officer Dustin Hinkey. Every year he's been on the force, he's gotten a written reprimand for something. Mine is just the latest one. He did get a written reprimand and was reprimanded for what he did to me. Not as much as I think he should have been, but at least he got something. And that's going to take us to another story because I don't want to spend the rest of the time. And here we've got another story yet again, and I hope we can get some of these national stories later too. But Jefferson County Attorney Mike O'Connell, did you guys see the paper today when he's talking about his own traffic school course?
Ever since the paper flamed out with John David Dyche, I'll just say it now, I have not even read the Courier Journal, much less purchased one.
I'll be honest with you, I don't either. This story was actually sent to me to read, and as I read it, I just started laughing so hard I couldn't help myself. But Jefferson County Attorney Michael Connell has decided he can be judge and jury with traffic cases. Michael Connell has decided he's going to offer his own traffic school. The legislature actually authorized this kind of an approach last year. Okay, so he's not alone. There's 50 other county attorneys statewide that offer their own traffic school. But I expect that in your smaller communities and things like that. No, Michael Connell is going to offer his own traffic school at a cost of $150. If you get a traffic ticket at a cost of $150, you can take these classes online, and your charges and records will be dismissed once you complete the two-hour course online. Now, here's the thing. You also don't have to pay court costs. But here's the thing. Anybody ever heard of the words due process? What Michael Connell just said was, you give me $150, and this whole thing goes away. Because there's no way he could prove whether you take the classes online. If I'm the one that's required to take the classes, I could give Ken $20 to take the classes for me. Who would know the difference? Nobody. Okay, so it's not even like these guys are going to do their own thing. And the second thing is, since when did a county attorney become judge and jury for any criminal case, traffic or otherwise? How can Mike O'Connell sit here and agree to dismiss a case for a fee? You're just buying a verdict. I mean, that's exactly what this is. This was stopped in Kentucky many, many years ago. Even Chief Justice John Minton.
Yeah. Well, what's alarming about it is that you can buy an innocent, you can buy an exoneration. Now, forever in a day, I can remember from back when I was a teenager, you got a ticket, you know, you could save yourself a trip and you could basically buy a conviction and mail it in, but which is what you usually did. But yeah, this is buying an exoneration. I'm like, hey, wow. How cool is that? I could have used that when I was 16, 17, and 18.
Yeah.
Wow.
Well, that's exactly it.
Traffic school and all this, the traffic court, for the most part, the little things especially, are a joke. I mean, come on, really? 5 miles an hour over the speed limit?
All it is designed to do is create revenue. I agree with you.
Right. And so what they've done is they've streamlined the process of getting revenue. Instead of having to take up the court's time and get a judge to say you can go to traffic school, the attorney's cutting out of the loop. But the problem is, and this gets back to what we were talking about earlier, due process. You know, cops can't slap the crap out of people. It's not their job to be the jury and the judge. Likewise, it's not the county attorney's job to be the judge. This is a problem that our criminal justice system is not functioning as it should. Only judges should be able to put down sentences and command you to do things.
And a judge doesn't allow you to walk into court and just buy yourself off. What makes this so comical to me, it just boils my blood, is Michael Connell. Michael Connell's office, under Michael Connell's direction, under Michael Connell's leadership, refuses to expunge cases. He don't believe in expunging criminal cases once you're found guilty. But yet here he is telling you, you give me $150 and your case just disappears. Because that's essentially what you're doing. And even more interesting is we have to look at what's really going on and who's actually benefiting from this. There's a place called PSI Kentucky, folks. It's a limited liability corporation that's listed on the Secretary of State's website. According to the Courier-Journal, this $150 fee is divided three ways. Michael Connell's office gets $76 of it, $49 goes to the vendor, which is PSI of Kentucky, and $25 goes to the administrative office of the courts. Now, I'm trying to understand why Michael Connell felt so strongly that this vendor, PSI of Kentucky, who has only been in business since October of 2012, folks, less than 6 months ago, why did he decide that they were the best qualified to run this program and give them a no-bid contract? That's the key here, no bid. This wasn't something he even put out there. There are plenty of people out there with much more experience that could come in at the same price. Plenty of people out there that do this stuff across the whole country. They have years and years of experience and a track record to grow on. And he went to this nobody startup business and gave this guy, potentially millions of dollars in fees every year. How did that happen?
It's almost like the company was started up for that purpose.
Well, I'm glad you said that, Ken, because I can tell you how it happened. It happened because PSI is reported in the Courier as being owned and operated by Jake Patrick. And he's 26 years old and the son of Bill Patrick. Bill Patrick, of course, is the former chairman of the Kentucky Democratic Party. He's also the executive director of the County Attorneys Association. And Bill Patrick had his own little questions to answer many years ago in 2003. In 2003, for you guys that may or may not remember, there was a lot of questions about well-paid assistants being bought for the state. You had these people called principal assistants. These are basically nothing but political hires that the state started bringing in, and the payroll went up millions of dollars because of it. Bill was one of those people. Now this guy has all these connections, and he's trying to take care of his son, I guess. But what's really interesting here is when you go to the state or Secretary of State's website and you start trying to research PSI, the Patricks aren't listed anywhere. Although the Courier says that PSI is owned and operated by Jake Patrick, Jake Patrick and Bill Patrick don't show up anywhere on the Secretary of State's business filings anywhere as owning businesses. None. When you look at the actual articles of organization and incorporation, the actual organization of this company was done by Norman Arflack. The actual administrator the actual guy that runs this thing every day is a guy by the name of Wendell Wilson. All of this is out of Lexington and Richmond. All of these guys like to give money to Greg Stumbo and the Kentucky Democratic Party. So is this Michael Connell paying some people back for political ties? Go ahead.
Sure sounds like it. I mean, what a moneymaker. You probably get one good server, a couple canned videos, and canned multiple choice questions, and basically it's just a web address. Boom, and you're raking it in.
If you look at criminal defense, I mean, Skip DeLure, everybody should be familiar with Skip DeLure's name. He's on the Ethics Commission here in Louisville. But, you know, he's also a criminal defense lawyer. Criminal defense lawyer Skip DeLuris basically says that he don't see what the point of this law is other than to put money into the county attorney's hands. Now, we know that Michael Connell has tried many ways to get money put in his hands, and this is probably the latest example. But Chief Justice John Minton has some serious concerns. Kentucky Chief Justice John Minton said he is bothered by any type of system that raises money based on fees, that this program is nothing more than a throwback to the days before court reform in Kentucky when the courts were funded by fines. So, you know, here you've got the Chief Justice of Kentucky has some serious concerns with this. You've got top criminal defense lawyers that have serious concerns with this. And you go to another defense attorney, Benham Sims. He says he finds it offensive that O'Connell maintains a policy of opposing expungement, which I pointed out, for prior criminal offenses for offenders who have so much as a traffic ticket. But now if you pay him $150, he's going to make the charge go away. This is disturbing to me on many, many levels. Do you guys feel the same way?
Well, you know, I know a fair amount of lawyers. And lawyers will tell you that there's two different kinds of lawyers. You got litigators and you got fixers. Now, this has got to be upsetting to lawyers because, you know, the fixers were the ones that were, you know, if you knew who they were, you could pay them $500, and they could pretty much make anything disappear. You know, it's just...
Well, they still do that every day, although it's more than
$500. Basically, it sounds like he's lowered the price, but it sounds like Michael Connell's office is playing the role of a fixer lawyer. It's a, look, you know, I can make it go away.
Thank you. That's exactly
it. It's a bargain. I mean, you know, I'll give you that much. Real world, yes, ethics and due process and all that aside, that's a bargain because, I never needed a fixer of a lawyer, you know, one that was a fixer, but I knew what their rates were. And that is a bargain, I'm telling you, right now.
it really is. It really is. But that's the thing, because this is not supposed to be what justice is about. You know, Michael Connell will sit there and spend thousands and even millions of dollars in wasteful spending. We have one particular example right now where he's trying to go to the Supreme Court, you know, over a case that doesn't need to go there on a DUI case that he lost, you know. Then you've got another example. I don't know how many thousands of dollars it's going to cost the city by the time he decides to go against me next Tuesday and lose for nothing. You know, I mean, these are just examples. If he has such a problem with money, why is he wasting so much? But then when we start looking at all of these guys, the people that are involved here, you know, PSI of Kentucky, Bill Patrick, his son Jake, all of these other people, you know, we've got to start asking some serious questions. Because, you know, when O'Connell's getting all this money, now you think about this, there were 21,439 pre-payable citations in Jefferson County in 2011. Those are traffic cases. All right. Now let's look at the reality here. If the class was taken for every one of those in 2011, the county's attorney's office would have got $1.6 million, and $1 million would have went to PSI. Now, here's how you reward a Kentucky Democratic Party chairman and a Democratic operative. His kid's going to get $1 million from this, and your name's not associated with it in any way. That's the truth. And then you put some other people on top, so it's even harder to find you by saying that your organizer is Norman Arflack, you know, and your daggone representative is Wendell Wilson. These Patrick's names don't show up anywhere on here. Yet the Courier Journal says that Jake Patrick owns and operates it. So we are working under a secrecy agreement here, and you know, for a company that has been in business less than 6 months, it has no track record to speak of. You know, you've got other people out there that have a track record, that do a damn good job. You know, we've got some serious questions here.
The number one flaw in all of this is the no-bid contract. Mm-hmm. And that's number one. Let's say everything else about this is legit, or mm-hmm. legit on its face. Let's mm-hmm. ignore all the other things that are wrong. The no-bid contract should be a giant red flag right there.
I agree.
The fact that it was not bid out screams cronyism. I mean, it screams it from the rooftops. And that should be the immediate thing that, if anything comes out of any of this, should be the first thing. I didn't know we were allowed to award no bid contracts in the state. I thought we had to bid everything out.
Well, and then, of course, Michael Connell says he never had one single conversation with Bill Patrick. And I know that's a lie. There's no way that Michael Connell, there's no way that Michael Connell can be elected as a top Democrat and a county attorney in Jefferson County without having some kind of a personal relationship with current and former Kentucky Democratic Party chairman. There's no way. So that just totally defies common sense and logic. You know, and to go with this no bid contract, I agree with you, Ken. It's a top red flag for me. You know, there is another company in Kentucky called AdventFS.com. They're based out of E-Town. But they provide basically the same service to 200 counties across the Midwest and the Southeastern United States. And they weren't even allowed to bid on this with all that experience and that many people? I don't get it.
Well, that's the thing. You know, it's like it's another thing. How do you establish not only cronyism but everything, but how do you establish a price for this without, you know, if you're going to run no bid?
Well, that's exactly it. So, you know, they had to do some research to get a price, right? So clearly, they were paying attention to what they were doing. And, you know, this just screams stinking to high heaven. And I'm wanting to know, and I guess we're going to have to go to Attorney General Jack Conway, and I don't expect anything from him either because he's part of that Democratic machine. He's a hack, too. But we're going to have to find out if Michael Connell broke any rules by giving this no-bid contract to PSI. I just don't understand how he can do that without any oversight. I mean, you might as well just bring up anybody and give them all the money you want to. It makes no sense to me because this has just totally been ignored. So we're gonna have to do some more work on that. There is a slight touch on that in today's stories at LouisvillePolitics.com. And, of course, you know, you can check out a replay of this show for you guys that are listening. You can check that out as well. I just don't understand this. And then when you throw in the principal assistant positions – that were such a big problem back in 2003 that are still a problem today. You know, these are nothing but political appointments, you know, averaging $50,000, $60,000 a year, growing, you know, adding millions of dollars to the payroll. But more importantly, at a time we're in this pension crunch, we've still got an overbloated government with these type of jobs that is also overloading the pension cost and the health care cost.
Yep.
You know, so we've got to look at the big picture here, folks, and see what the hell is really going on. And I've got to get a hat tip real quick, if I can, to Joe Girth today, too. You know, it's very rare.
Bummer.
Joe. Yeah, well, it's hard to do, man. I mean, I'm choking actually inside trying to tell you guys this. But Joe actually did a good job. He put an article out yesterday, you know, and his article basically said that it's the House Democrats who have been the perpetrators of skullduggery, chicanery, and duplicity in this session. He's blaming the House Democrats essentially for the problems. That is a big step for not only the Courier-Journal, but for Joe Girth as well. You know, it's a big step for him to blame the House Democrats. And he even mentioned Tom McKee's actions on Senate Bill 50, you know, and things like that. So that's an article I actually would ask everybody to check out if you want to, if you get a chance. It is online, so you can check it out at their online paper as well. In the meantime, guys, a couple of quick things to talk about before we get out of here. Matt, I've got Ashley Judd. Comments?
Yeah.
Not going to be senator.
Do what?
Well, personally, I think it's a career move. I think, if I'm a Democrat, I'm praying to God that Allison Lundgren Grimes gets in because I think she's more of a real deal kind of candidate. But I've questioned from a few people. It's like, okay, well, what are her policies? You know, what are her ideas? What are her policies? And you can't get anything from even the most even the most enthusiastic Ashley Judd fan. They got nothing. They got nothing on the deficit. She hasn't even spoken out much on the wars. So it's like, okay, we are devoid of opinions. I don't know how in the hell you go through life and not have somebody record an opinion on you when you're a celebrity, you know, on something like that. But secondly, I think you've got an L.A. born, brought up rich. You've always been praised and adored because you're one of the judges. You know, you're in movies, you're red carpet, you consider yourself royalty. She's actually been quoted as saying that.
Yep.
And wow. You're about to step in front of the Mitch McConnell character assassination thrashing machine. I think she's going to be so far out of her element when that hits that she's probably going to do an about face, you know, and take her newfound celebrity and get a few more $1 million per movie when she gets back into it.
Well, you
there's
know,
there's no way she becomes senator. That's my simple answer. There's no calculation, no way she can become senator. She's
don't underestimate on one thing. Don't underestimate one thing. Ashley Judd is an accomplished actress. At one time, she was one of the highest paid actresses in Hollywood. And there's a reason I bring that up. A couple of weeks ago, Ashley Judd was speaking at George Washington University. And, you know, she's railing on, and nobody really knows what the hell she was talking about. She's that far out there, you know. But after she got through with her speech, she opened up the floor to questions from the audience. And to tell you how much she's paying attention to her audience and how engaged she is.
Yeah,
one of the audience members asked her a question. She didn't hear. The moderator had to interrupt her. Miss Judd, do you have an answer? Oh, what was the question? I'm sorry, I was giving my mother eye kisses. So she was not even paying attention. Then you get into the spoiled rich elite.
Hey, come on, let's make a joke. You're Hollywood. That's when you go cut. Okay, let's take it again from the top.
Well, see, there you go, because that's what I'm getting at, because she can get away with that there, all right? And then, of course, she goes on talking about how she winters in Scotland, because she's above staying in Kentucky in the winter. And, of course, she's went out publicly and spoken out against having kids. She's a pure feminist through and through. She says nobody should have kids because it's unconscionable to breed children while there are so many starving children in the world. She thinks that fathers giving away their daughters at weddings is pathetic, because it just goes to prove male dominion over woman's reproductive status. And then, of course, mountaintop removal. We've talked about that so much in Kentucky. She compares mountaintop removal mining to the Rwandan genocide. And then, of course, Christianity is bad because it legitimizes and seals male power. Now, these are statements that she's made. These are statements that are, you know, some
this
of these
what
are
I'm
recent
saying.
Statements.
And she's going to run up against the Mitch McConnell thrashing machine, which is, you know, That's phenomenal, and you know, and I think where Ken's going with his comment that there's no way she's going to be senator is she's got so many basically I will follow Obama anywhere comments. Not in a state like Kentucky. If you need to check your election results and see that that won't impress the Kentucky voters statewide.
But see, that's why I'm wondering, because here's the deal with me. Ashley Judd has not been a resident of Kentucky since she was a kid, okay? Tennessee is what she calls home, but until recently when she filed for divorce against her husband, most of her time was spent abroad with him anyway. Tennessee is just what she called home. As a matter of fact, in November, last year at the Democratic National Convention, Ashley Judd was a delegate from Tennessee.
Yeah.
So she doesn't live in Kentucky, hasn't lived in Kentucky in many, many years. You know, so we've already got this situation. Then we've got these comments. But here's what's going to happen. These Democrats are going to depend.
We're guys and we're in Kentucky, so we got to go there. You know,
well, part
this year,
of it,
Kentucky really, this year, UT really put a thrashing on UK in both football and basketball. So, hey, you're UT, you're a Tennessee fan, you're a Tennessee resident, so good luck with that.
Yeah, you know, but here's what's going to happen, though. They're going to take her back. They're going to sequester her. All right, and they're going to give her a script because she's an actress. She knows how to read a script, and she knows how to memorize her lines. And they're going to school her, and this is going to be just another acting job. And she's going to convince some people. She's going to get some votes, guys. And I tell you what I think the plan is for her to carry all of Louisville. Because if you remember, Kentucky voted against Barack Obama. How did Louisville vote?
Yeah.
All right. So we've got to look at that. She's going to get some votes, but I pray to God that we're a lot smarter than to even think about somebody like that. Folks, I'm going to take one quick phone call. We're going to go into overdrive because I got to get this call in. It's our good friend, Mr. Paul Holliger over at Stop It. How are you, sir?
Hi, gentlemen.
Man, you're calling late. Just beat it. What's up, buddy?
I know. Well, you brought up a hot button topic for me late, so
awesome.
I responded to your show's direction. Hey, listen, guys. The Ashley Judd thing is just fascinating from my point of view as a political observer. Mm-hmm. I'm kind of like Ken and Ed. I don't think that she could win. However, there is a wild card in all of this, and that's called the Republican Party. Now, you know, the Republican Party, especially in Kentucky, has figured out numerous times how to snatch defeat from the jaws of victory. And I suspect that the Ashley Judd candidacy could get the Mitch McConnell crew and his cohorts in the Republican Party of Kentucky to make some bonehead decisions that could tip the scale in her favor somewhat. What do you think?
It's very possible. I would never argue with you on that. It is very possible. I just find the whole dynamic to be really interesting because of the whole actress aspect. I mean, she's nuttier than a fruitcake. There's no doubt about that, and I don't think anybody would argue about that. She is nuttier than a fruitcake, but she's also, you got to give credit where it's due, she's also a very accomplished actress, and the Democrats know how to act during elections. They just do.
You remember Governor Moonbeam Jerry Brown? He got reelected recently out in California. So,
that's funny, too. It's very possible, and that's the whole thing. You know, where does I don't know, what's a good way to put this? I'm trying to understand why people just can't comprehend how asinine of a possibility this is, and why
it isn't just the public at large. It's the Republican Party screwing things up.
Well, there's no doubt the Republicans have no answer.
You know, and I think you know, actually putting a positive spin on it, I think this could serve as a wake-up call, because under no other circumstances, with adequate leadership and adequate innovation and a measured degree of compromise to get things done, you know, and not saying things as the number, you know, the most, the number two guy in the Senate, the number one Republican in the Senate, her goal is to make Barack Obama a one-term president. You know, it's a failure of leadership on the part, and this is where I go with Paul, it's on the part of the Republican Party that they're even having this discussion, because if you had a real leader and the Republicans were really trying to govern well, as opposed to govern opportunistically and like govern to consolidate and grow their power, we wouldn't be having this conversation, because there's no A/B-list actress or actor who would dare challenge a good representative.
Well, I don't think there's any doubt about that. It's fascinating to me that Paul, you bring up the point that the Republicans basically continue shooting themselves in the foot because they really don't have any answer. And I'll agree with that, because ultimately this is just one more example of why we need to use independents and third-party people and everything else, get the whole board leveled out so we can get more compelling partners in our political structure. Because quite frankly, we have to have these guys involved, because when you have a two-party system, one is corrupt and one is inept. We really have no other choices, do we? And that really is something that has to be addressed. And I think, people like Ken are doing a good job addressing that issue. People like Michael Lewis over at Independent Kentucky, he's doing a good job addressing that issue. But this is why, again, when we look at stuff like this whole Ashley Judd actually being considered a serious race, we know we've got some serious problems, not only in Kentucky, but throughout the electoral process. So, it's just strange to me. I think the dynamics are good, but I do not want you guys to one-time discount Ashley Judd. This woman is an accomplished actress. She knows how to turn it on. She's got a cute little smile. And I'm telling you what, man, it's a package. She's dumb as rocks, but it's a package that's going to be hard for an unpopular senator to blow her out of the water with. And McConnell is very unpopular. So we'll have to see how this looks going forward. That's it, guys. Thank you so much. Go ahead, real quick.
I just want to say real quick, I got $5 for the first taker. Ashley Judd doesn't break 50% in the state of Kentucky. First taker, $5 bet.
All right, we got it out there. Let me know, folks. I'll hook you up with Ken on that bet. Paul, thanks for the phone call.
I'll go even money on $5 that if Allison Leonard and Grimes decides to get in, she'll beat Ashley in the primary.
Well, there we go. Final thoughts, my friend.
Final thoughts. I don't know if you covered this the other night. But my final thoughts are a kudos to a person sometimes I've locked horns with and sometimes I've agreed it with. But have you covered the Marilyn Parker issue here on the city council?
You know, yeah. I did not cover that last week. I'm glad you brought that up.
I
go
just
ahead.
Want to take a minute to give big kudos to Marilyn Parker. In the midst of all this pension gobbledygook, a freshman council critter, as we like to call him, on the Louisville Metro Council, has declined the pension. So she, you know, she could be on the clock. She could be starting to amass it, but she declined it. So I just want to give a shout out to Marilyn Parker and say, way to go. That's, that's what we need more of, leading by example.
And, you know, I totally agree with that. It was one thing I tried to get to last week. There was so much going on, we just didn't get to that. I personally have been very critical of Marilyn Parker in her former races. Marilyn Parker, in a lot of ways, to me, is way out there on some issues. However, you know, if what you do is, you know, if you talk the talk, you walk the walk. And Marilyn Parker has clearly done that, and she deserves some serious props for it. For a freshman council person to sit here and decline, you know, a pension that's guaranteed to her, speaks volumes about how sincere she is in her efforts. And Marilyn Parker, I think, sent out a powerful message with that statement, followed up on it. And, Marilyn Parker, I'm going to look forward to watching her in the future to come, because I tell you what, if she feels that strongly about we need to get this under control, that she's willing to forgo any personal benefit, I tell you, that's a direction we need to take. And I'm firmly in your camp on that one. In the meantime, folks, that's a wrap. That's it for tonight. Tomorrow night at 7, we'll be right back here with Mr. Ed Martin. Who knows what in the hell we'll get into, probably some more local stuff. But we do have some national stuff we got to get to this week sometime. So we'll do our best. But in the meantime, you folks have a great night. Don't forget tomorrow night at 7 o'clock right here for the Ed Springsteen Show. Wednesday night for the Ed Springsteen Show, where we have Dale the Truth on. And, of course, Thursday night with TNT and Sunday with Liberty Unbridled. All at 7 o'clock right here on BTR. You folks have a great night. Thank you, Mr. Martin. Take care.
Have a good one, Mr. Ed. We'll be right back.